I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
My gut reaction to seeing the words, "Should I just sacrifice my ambition to make things easier for us?" is to be like, no. No. My gut reaction to ever seeing anybody ask if they should sacrifice their ambition for a relationship is always to like, I feel like I see the world, everything that's ever happened in the history of forever flashing before my eyes as I'm reaching out my arms. I'm like, no.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're on a song party tonight and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, inventor of sleepovers, keeper of secrets. Welcome to the summer party. You are, of course, obviously invited. That's why you're here. I am so excited to be sitting in my bed right now talking to you guys. I need a little bit of a break from these two, these cats, Mango, sweetie, angel of my life, who has literally never done anything wrong ever in her entire existence, and Sidestep, who is what I am affectionately calling the devil of the day, who has made it her mission to just scratch everything that I own. Everything. As if I haven't given her enough things to scratch, to play with. She's like, you know what? The side of your couch, the side of your bed, the side of this chair in the corner of the room right now, kind of really would be awesome to sink my teeth and claws into. Sometimes I just need to meditate. I just need to meditate on it and accept it, because there's literally nothing I can do. What can I do about this cat that will not stop scratching my shit after I've given her all of these other things to scratch instead? She does not care. She does not care. She prefers the couch. Does it hurt me? Yes, it does. It's a direct attack on me. This is why she's the devil of the day. Do I love her? Also, yes. Also, yes. And I will try to train it out of you, Miss Girl. We're going to try, continuously try, always, to teach you not to do that. It's also interesting. She's very scared of kisses. Trying to get her unscared of kisses, but for whatever reason, every time I go to kiss her, she like bolts across the room. So what I've been doing is I'll pick up Mango and I'll go sit right next to Sidestep, so she's watching the two of us, and I'll kiss Mango like 100 times and be like, see, Mango likes it, totally normal and awesome. Famously, many people have said getting a kiss on the forehead fucking rocks. Famously, I have said that. I don't even know when the last time I got a kiss on the forehead is, and I'm doing free promo for kisses on the forehead. Sidestep, still not about that life yet, but we're going to get there. Oh, I'm going to get you, girl. Oh, I am going to get you one of these days. Okay, top of the episode, big announcement we've got to bring to the people. Talked about this on Patreon last week, for those of you that were in on the juice a little bit early. Announced this formally over on my Instagram and the community tab of this channel on youtube.com if you saw that. But if you've somehow missed all of these updates and you have no idea what I'm talking about, we announced, and by we I mean me, the location for next summer's Lover Girls group trip. Next summer, the Lover Girls are going to Croatia. I am so excited. I love Croatia so much. I've been to Croatia before. It is famously my favorite country that I've ever traveled to. So I'm so excited to go back. We're going to do a week in June. I believe it's the 16th to the 22nd. We're hitting Split, Hvar, and Dubrovnik, and it's going to be fucking incredible. Being in the Adriatic, drinking wine, we're visiting an oyster farm, okay? We've got a boat day planned. I've talked so much about the salt concentration of the fucking Adriatic and how much I loved it. I love feeling buoyant. I love being a buoyant bitch. And I'm always a buoyant bitch in every body of water, but in the Adriatic, I swear to fucking God, I could sit there like T-pose in the water and I don't have to kick my feet or move my arms or anything. T-pose in the Adriatic and I would not fucking sink. I wouldn't. And I'll prove it to you. To those of you that come on the trip, I will be T-posing in the Adriatic to prove to you that I will not sink. And all of you will T-pose in the Adriatic as well, and you will not sink either, okay? It will be awesome. We will all T-pose in the Adriatic next summer. It's gonna be me, Ashley's coming with me again, our experienced local tour guide, and 24 of you guys. If you are listening to this message, you are invited on the trip. This is going to be my fifth group trip that I've run, which is crazy. Time fucking flies, but these trips have such a special place in my heart. I always say, come alone, leave with friends. Most people come on these trips solo, and I promise you, everybody leaves with a bunch of new friends, new people to keep in touch with after the trip is long gone. And you know what? That's a courageous and vulnerable thing to choose to go on a group trip with 24 strangers. So in some ways, I feel like the very concept of this kind of travel attracts the kind of people that are down to best eat up, get into it, get vulnerable, get open, be a little brave with each other. Take a look at the trip page where you can see everything that is included in the price, everything that's not included in the price, where we're going, what all of our excursions are, the general timeline of everything. All of the trip details are going to be on the main trip page. That is going to be linked down below. It should answer most of your questions. I am going to be doing a Q&A over on my Instagram today, Thursday, August 21st, I believe, is the day this episode goes live. I'm going to be doing a Q&A over on my Instagram today. And then if you missed it, it's going to be pinned to my Instagram and I'm going to repost those answers on the community tab of my YouTube channel and this podcast channel. The answers are going to be fucking everywhere. So please soak in all that information, let it simmer, let it sit, and prepare for the trip of a lifetime next summer because we're going to have so much fun. In Croatia. I can't fucking believe it. Trip number 5, baby. Let's fucking go. And just a heads up. Famously, these trips have always sold out in the first 10 minutes they are live. So I don't mean to alarm you, but I have reason to believe this trip will also sell out quickly. So indulge in all of your information now. Set those alarms. Make those plans. Tickets go live Friday, August 29th at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Top tier patrons get first access, and then it'll go live to everyone else. Take a think. Think it over. And maybe I'll see you next summer. Ooh, how fucking exciting. I kind of just want to hop into a bunch of audience submissions today because that box is backed the fuck up, okay? I feel like I haven't been able to do as many audience submissions recently, so I want to get in there and do like a full episode of audience submissions and hear what the hell has been going on in all of your guys' lives. But before I jump in, I just have to tell you guys my I've always said that of the week. I have one this week. And this is one that really is persistent. I've thought this for so long. I don't believe I've ever said this on the channel. So brand new hot take coming at you. It's not even that hot. To me, it's not hot. But to some people out there, this is going to be fucking scalding. To some people out there, they're not going to like this. But this is what I come to deliver you at the sleepover here on the Emotionally Online podcast. Okay? Okay. Here it is. Like, I'm just going to read you what I literally wrote down here as I was journaling through it this morning. I think it is so fucking boring when formerly fat people get on God's green internet and are like, yeah, dude, it's true. People treat you worse when you're fat, as if they themselves have discovered fat phobia on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. But the reason that it bothers me is not because people are acknowledging the obvious. Yes, some people can be unkind to you just because you are big. People who are big and then lose weight and see how differently they are treated. Yes, that makes total sense that that may be an observation that you have, knowing that fat phobia is an incredibly real thing. That's not the part that bothers me. The part that bothers me is how this conversation, this acknowledgement of the obvious, tends to morph into a conversation where thin people are just jump scaring other thin people about how terrible and scary it is to be fat. And I'll be so fucking honest with you, that is not my experience as a fat person. Have I experienced fat phobia and people being the fucking worst? Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Have I also experienced the joy and comfort of being well-loved and celebrated and supported by the right goddamn people? Yes, the fuck I have. My body has not prevented me from having those things. Have I been exposed to some of the worst people imaginable? Yeah. Have I also met and loved and been loved by some of the best people imaginable? Yes. And listen, I know that a lot of the times people mean well about this. What triggered this thought this week was in witnessing a lot of the posts that are going around on TikTok in response to the Samira and Cardi B situation. I fucking love Samira. I admire the hell out of her. She is a damn good activist. She stands 10 toes down for the big girls and always has. The Cardi B situation is fucking nasty. Thankfully, because my algorithm is perfectly curated at this point in time, I'm only seeing videos of other big girls on Team Samira. I don't need to know or associate with people who are not Team Samira in all of this. Straight up, I don't need to know you, girl. To make a very long story short, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Cardi B launched merch and the big sizes sold out immediately, and she made a post being like, damn, I didn't realize my fans were so fucking fat. You fatty sold this shit out immediately. Fat, fat, fat. Just being real fucking weird about it. Just weirdo hours completely. And Samira made a response video being like, hey, so what the hell? Hey, girl, what the fuck is going on? Calling her out, educating her on why that is a very weirdo thing to do. And Cardi B didn't have any of it. Doubled down and, you know, Cardi B is a massive celebrity. So Samira's comments were swiftly filled with a bunch of people just going in on this nonsense. So anyways, I have seen a lot of people talking about this online, and I have seen a couple videos from formerly fat people empathizing with what Samira was talking about and the critique she was giving to Cardi B. But somewhere within all of the like empathy from formerly fat people, there's just something about it that irks me. Obviously, everyone is entitled to their own experience. Maybe when you lived life in a fat body, everyone did look at you when you entered the room and spit at you and give you the middle finger and then punch you across the face. Maybe that did happen to you. Maybe. But I would just like to add to the ring another experience, which is mine, which is that I'm fat and people fucking love me. I'm fat and I am well loved, well admired, well supported. Me being fat has not been a hindrance to me knowing this kind of love and respect on a deep cellular level. And I would just like to throw that out there into the ring. Okay? I'm done with all these scare tactics that people have. You might gain weight at some point in your life. You might someday be fat, and that will be an okay thing. Your life will go on, and it will probably still be awesome. Should we talk about fat phobia and the very real impacts of that and how people do actively treat fat people? Yes, absolutely we should. I've been disrespected so many times because of my body. And also, I've experienced the opposite many times in my life as well. I just think there's a way that we can talk about fat phobia and the way that people treat people in fat bodies without going so far to the deep end where it seems like you're talking about the fucking boogeyman. You know what I mean? I just feel like sometimes people take it a step too far. Not to say that what you're talking about isn't valid. Obviously, as discussed, we didn't discover fat phobia within this very conversation. We know that that is a thing that happens. And also, I think that we can have some balance within this conversation, acknowledging that fat phobia exists while simultaneously acknowledging that being fat is not the thing that bars you from being loved, from being admired, from being supported, from being truly cherished and celebrated. And I take issue with people who make it seem like it is. And I've always said that. That's my take. Take it or leave it.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, should we get into these audience submissions? Can I just say, I'm so fucking hungry. Like, I'm recording this episode off raw vibes. All I'm thinking about right now is what I'm going to order for dinner afterwards. It's 8 p.m. as I'm recording this. It's been a long goddamn day. The dog inside me is begging to get out right now. I'm fucking starving. So if I say something crazy, it's because I'm fucking hungry. Give me a break, people. Hey, Maddie, I'm in serious need of some big sister advice. I've been seeing this new guy for about a month, and every time we see each other, it's amazing. Our dates last for 5 to 7 hours, and I feel like I never want them to end. I know it's early, but I felt really secure in our connection. He's a friend of a friend, so I trust his character, and he's told me he's looking for something long-term, just like me. Recently, he canceled one of our dates really last minute, like within 2 hours. He was apologetic and explained that he had to work. I let him know that I understood, but I was a little disappointed he had canceled. Then he sent a text saying he was sorry, that I didn't deserve that, and that work was really busy. He ended his text by saying, I really want to put my best foot forward, but at this time, I don't think I really can. Would it be possible to give this another shot at another time? I'm really stuck. On the one hand, I really like this guy, and I honestly don't see myself catching feelings for anyone else that isn't him for a while. On the other hand, I'd rather throw up than wait around, twiddling my thumbs for it to be a good time for him. That doesn't feel really considerate of my time. I need some guidance. How do I approach this? Right off the bat, my gut reaction is to be like, do not wait for him. Don't wait for him. Don't wait for any man, ever. Me to me. Just don't do it. If it's meant to happen, it will happen regardless. So don't wait around for a man to get his fucking shit together. If and when he does, he will make it known to you that he has. So we don't have to wait around for that to happen. If someone sent me this text and I really liked them, I liked how things were going, and I wanted things to remain open in the future without like disrespecting myself and my own time, I would handle this by being like, if in the future things align for us and you want to take me out, then we can revisit that conversation then. But I can't promise that I will still be available for you by the time you are ready for me. I'm not going to wait for you. I'm not going to wait around for you to be ready. Go off and live your life. Totally can respect that now is not the right time for you. If and when you are ready to date at some point, feel free to throw your hat in the ring. But I can't promise you that I'm still going to be here. You know, you're going to have to do a brave thing. You're going to have to do a scary thing. You're going to have to throw your hat in the ring without knowing if I'm going to be there to saddle up, if you know what I mean. I can't promise you that when you come back, I'm going to you know, accept this advance. I might reject you when you come back. And that's something that everyone's just going to have to accept, because you shouldn't wait for anyone. So to boil that down, my response would basically be to say that I respect that now is not the right time for them to be exploring something. If in the future they're feeling more open-minded about dating, they can definitely reach out to me, but I can't promise that I will still be available when that time comes. There it is. Gorgeous. Perfect. Send it. Write it down and send it right now. We can't even workshop that, guys. It's perfect. Send it. Send it right now. Oh my God, I'm fucking starving. Excuses, excuses. When was the last time you were due for a doctor's visit but just kept pushing it off for whatever reason you deemed most important that week? You couldn't find your insurance card. You're just too busy. You'd rather take a new workout class, go get a manicure, go hang out and get dinner with your friends, whatever the thing of the week was that was more important than getting yourself to the doctor's office. We've all been there. Sometimes booking a doctor's appointment can be really daunting. But thanks to ZocDoc, there is no reason to delay, because they make it so easy to find a doctor that is right for you. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with over 10,000 doctors across every single specialty. From mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care to dermatology, whatever you're looking for, they have doctors ready and waiting for you over on ZocDoc. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are a good fit for any specific medical need you may have. Once you find the right doctor for you, you can see their actual appointment openings and click to instantly book an appointment time right on the website. And appointments through ZocDoc typically happen fast, most happening within 24 to 72 hours of booking. In some cases, you may even be able to score same-day appointments. I've used ZocDoc many times in the past. It's what I used to find my dermatologist when I moved to New York. It's quick, it's easy, it's all in one place. Truly the most stress-free doctor's office booking experience I have ever had. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and head to ZocDoc.com/emotionallyonline to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/emotionallyonline. ZocDoc.com/emotionallyonline. Hi, Maddie. I'd like to spill my guts to the slumber party girlies, and I'm hoping for some insight. I am from Europe and have a fiance from the US. Currently, both of us live and work in my country, but we're getting married in October, which opens a possibility of me moving to the US as his spouse. Generally, moving across the ocean wouldn't be an issue. I've always dreamt of living abroad and traveling, and I've been to the US a few times and loved it. My issue is the job. I've had a rough time after college figuring out what I want to do, and I got a job in a field I thought would be temporary, but I stuck to it. It's okay, but definitely not something I'd want to do my entire life. However, last year I decided to start a psychology degree, and I absolutely love it, and I'd love to become a therapist one day. I would not be able to afford college in the US, and the thought of starting my career over feels overwhelming since I cannot work in the exact field I have experience in. My options in the States would probably be some entry-level jobs, and I would feel like an absolute loser at 30 starting a career over when I'm already somewhat established. My fiance has a job currently in my country, but he doesn't know for how long, and obviously he misses home and his family. Is there a good option here? Should I just sacrifice my ambition to make things easier for us? Is a trial year of living in the States a good option? My gut reaction to seeing the words, should I just sacrifice my ambition to make things easier for us, is to be like, no, no. My gut reaction to ever seeing anybody ask if they should sacrifice their ambition for a relationship is always to like, I feel like I see the world, everything that's ever happened in the history of forever flashing before my eyes as I'm reaching out my arms. I'm like, no. That's how I feel. I think that your ambition, your passion, your career, the thing in life that lights you up, that you're going to spend a fuck ton of your time doing, I think that that should be a major priority of yours. Obviously, your relationship is another major priority of yours, but you're young. You're 30. I think it would be wise to finish out your school now and push back your move to the US until after you've finished school, so you don't have to deal with that in the US, and you could pursue a job that's more in alignment with what would fulfill you and make you happy. Like, to push back your move until you're 32 or 33, where you have the rest of your life with your person and you get to pursue something that makes you happy, you get to pursue your ambitions and passions for the rest of your life. Like, you've got so much goddamn time, but to move there now and have to keep delaying your career, it's like, I just feel like that eventually eats up more time and you're unhappy in the process. If your significant other has a job right now and you guys can figure out, maybe you can get through school quickly, you know, maybe you can go a little bit faster, take classes over the summer, you know, double up if you can, I don't know, do something to scrunch down the amount of time it's going to take you to complete your schooling, work through that. But it, the question of should you sacrifice your ambition for a relationship, my answer is always going to be no. Should you compromise it? For sure. I think we can find ways to compromise and figure out what works for the relationship, but never ever, goddamn ever, abandon your ambition in pursuit of love. Never. There is room for both. We can figure out both. There are multiple solutions where you can have both, but it's going to require compromise. And also, I feel like you have to have the long-term vision in mind. Your partner has to have the long-term vision in mind as well. You know, if it makes more sense for him to miss his family for one extra year while you finish your degree before moving to the States, I think that that is fine. And that is sometimes the sacrifice you have to make for the long-term vision to make sense. Does it make sense for you to move to the U.S. having to work a job that you don't like, potentially just living there for a year and then coming back so you can finish your degree? Like, it just, that, I mean, you could do that, but it's like just putting off your life, putting off the thing that would make you happy. And it's going to take longer if you do it that way versus if you just take the brunt of it right now. Your partner has a job in Europe right now. See if you can stretch it a little longer while you finish out school and then move. That's what I would say. But to anyone listening to this across various other situations and career fields and ambitions and passions, just know that your ambition and the aspirations that you have out of life that are not connected to marriage, to family, to children, the stuff that is just for you, the things you want out of life that are just for you, do not sacrifice that shit for anything. That's what I believe. Some people will not agree with me. Many people will not agree with me, actually. But that is my perspective. I think that there are so much of the world that will encourage you to put your passion and your ambition on the sidelines in pursuit of a family unit and making that the easiest, most beautiful, wonderful thing for everybody besides yourself. I'm going to be the counter voice in this conversation and say, I don't think that you should do that. And I think it makes everything harder. And I think it helps to build resentment. I think that we've got to find a way to pull up a seat for our ambition at the table, because that's part of it. That's part of you and part of building a happy life with you and your partner is figuring out how to bring your ambition along for the ride, not just pushing it in a corner and being like, oh, I'll get back to it because it's a burden for me to be ambitious right now. It's not. Your ambition is not a burden. And I think there are many solutions where both your ambition and your relationship can be prioritized. So I would explore those. Have a nice long convo with your partner about this. I'm sure that you can come up with some options that don't require you to sacrifice what you want out of your life.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime.
Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Honestly, this is a good segue into the next one. Hey, Maddie. As a perpetually single girl living in a big city in my late 20s, I have a lot of anxiety about the future. I feel like getting into a relationship is the only ticket I have to prevent future loneliness. Ideally, I would like to meet someone, but there's always the chance that won't happen. As my friends start coupling up and leaving the city or moving into a different life stage, I wonder what the future holds for me if I never find someone. I can't get my head around what my community would look like or if I'd even have one at all. It fills me with dread for the future, and I feel at a loss on where to go from here. I could move to a smaller city, but I don't know if that necessarily solves the problem, as I would be starting from scratch building a community. I would appreciate your take on this, as I know you want to stay in New York forever. Is this something that plays on your mind too, and how would you deal with these feelings? Of course I think about this. You're not alone in this. I also famously love to think about the future and all the possible ways my future could look and who's going to be around and what family is going to look like. I think I've talked about this from the lens of like how family is going to evolve as I get older, and like if all of my siblings get married and have kids, like what is my life going to look like if I'm the one person in my family who doesn't have children? What is my life going to look like if I'm the one person among all of my friends who doesn't have children? And there's like this major life change that happens with all the people I love that just doesn't happen with me. I've thought about this, yeah, more from the children perspective than anything else. Just because I think that's a major thing that changes the amount of time that people have for the rest of their life. It changes everything. And if I'm choosing a child-free life, then I anticipate, I mean, maybe not. The times are changing and more young people are choosing to be child-free. But I think because that's not what I've observed in adults growing up, I always assumed that me choosing to be child-free would be something that was a lonelier path. But this is true about being true to yourself in any regard. I think that living a life that is truly authentically yourself sometimes is lonely. That is the sacrifice you make to being in alignment with yourself. For me, I feel like I have made many decisions in my life that are, accompanied with loneliness. Moving away from my family, moving to New York instead of going to a state school or something closer to my parents, choosing to uphold certain standards in dating, in the partners that I am willing to surround myself with, choosing to value my solitude and independence over just settling for, you know, someone who's good enough to fill up my time, choosing to pursue my dreams, pursue a creative career. This is a very lonely career, as you know, as social as it is, me talking to all of you guys right now. But like my day to day, you know, like right now, I'm sitting in my apartment alone talking to myself. A lot of people are going to see it later on. You're going to hear this days from now. But like the actual act of what I do, It is sometimes really lonely. It's me fucking talking to myself. This is what I do all day, every day. I'm either talking to myself in front of a camera, or I'm sitting at my computer listening to myself and editing it and getting it all set up. And, you know, it's lonely. I don't have coworkers. I don't have people that I routinely see every single week. I don't have a thing that requires me to get out of the house and be social. My social life is entirely something that I have to be boots on the ground taking control of. I don't have anything built into my schedule that, you know, forces me to get out of the house. And me feeling like I'll probably not have kids is another example of this. Like, these are all examples of me choosing things that I want that feel the best for me, but they are things that sometimes come with some loneliness. But just because they come with some loneliness doesn't mean that they are permanently lonely, right? You move to a new city, you don't know anybody. That's a choice that you're making. You are choosing to be a little bit lonely in pursuit of something greater. You're moving to this new city for XYZ a reason. You want to, it'll bring more opportunity. You're going to school, whatever it is. You make that choice. You choose loneliness. You move to that city and you join a trivia team. You start a book club. You strike up conversation with your neighbors. You take a dance class and talk to the other people enrolled. Like, you get to the new city, you start living life in that new city, and eventually you collect people along the way. You start building out your community, building out your, you know, friendships, your people, your core village in this new place, and then you're not so lonely anymore. Is it going to be like that forever? Of course not. There's phases to everything. You fall in and out of season with people. You grow apart from people. I actually, at the time that you are listening to this, it is my 10-year anniversary of living in New York. Actually, the day before. The 22nd, August 22nd, is when I moved to New York back in 2015. 10 years ago. My community in 2015 is what I needed in 2015. When I first moved to New York and I met a bunch of people in my dorm, in my college, at that time, they were exactly who I needed. And then we got older, time passed. Some people moved out of New York. Some people didn't see themselves here. Some people just, you know, you grow apart from people. People become different. Just because you went to the same college doesn't mean that you are similar people. So, you know, you retain some friends from that era, the ones that you do really connect with, and then you drift away from the rest, and then you enter the next era of your life. You know, same thing. You retain some people. Some people are in your life just for a season. Other people are here for so much longer. Make new friends. Keep the old. One is silver and the other is gold. A circle is round. It has no end. That's how long I want to be your friend. Okay? I was a Girl Scout once. That is the motto for me through and through. I have so many friends from, you know, all of these eras of my life. Friends from elementary school, from middle school, from theater camp, from college, from the internet, from fucking, I have friends from all over the goddamn place. I love making friends. It's my number one hobby. So I think for me, what feels comforting is like, I trust that 20 years, 30 years from now, when my life looks completely different, I trust in my ability to build a life for myself that feels exciting. I trust in my ability to build community, to find people that are in alignment with me. Do I assume that a lot of my friends will have kids and that will change our relationship to each other? Absolutely. Not that we won't be friends. God, that's not what I was insinuating. When I say change the relationship, I just mean like change the dynamic. They become less available. They can't, you know, come visit me on the drop of a hat. They might not be able to carve out time for a girls' trip every single year. Like, life changes when you have children. And I know that. And I anticipate that. And I am excited to be the most goddamn present auntie on the face of the planet to my friends' kids. But I acknowledge that our friendships might feel different. And that's okay, right? I am, you know, ready to show up differently for my friends, to be the one that pulls more weight during those seasons of our life because I'm going to be the one without kids. But it will be different. But I also trust myself to, at that point in my life, find other people that are on a similar life path that I am, to befriend more people that are choosing to be child-free, that are living in New York, that are, you know, whatever similarities that we have at that time. I trust in my ability to build community and evolve with myself, to let my life evolve with me. And I get what you're saying about like this pressure to find a partner. I've talked about this a bunch in so many different ways in life, but this is definitely the way that I feel like it comes up the most for me now. But even like, I remember in college feeling like when I lived so far from Ashley and from my sister, the two people who knew the most about me, who were like tied at the hip to me, that were my people. When I lived so far from the both of them, and there were periods of my life where I was around people, so many people that were in relationships, I was the only one that was single. And I would always think to myself at the time, like, I sometimes just wish that I had a person, someone that looked to me and, you know, we knew every weekend that we were going to do something together, that we were going to have plans together, that I could really be intertwined with. And I felt like I was intertwined with Ashley, with my sister, when we lived in the same place. But then you move and things change and you're not as intertwined on a day-to-day level anymore. We're still incredibly intertwined, me and Ashley, me and my sister. But it's different when you're not living in the same city as someone. But I always used to, you know, just look around at other people who were in relationships or they had a best friend who lived in their same city. And I would feel sad that I didn't have anyone to be like really totally intertwined with, to do the little things with, you know, to go grocery shopping with someone, to have these people that you can really last minute lean on and just do your life with. And feeling sad that I didn't have that, or that the people I did have that with didn't live in the same city as me anymore. So we couldn't really be as intertwined as we once were. And so in some ways, I feel like I started thinking about this back then when I realized that there were going to be eras of my life where I felt really untethered and not intertwined with anyone. And that was going to be a good thing, right? Because it was allowing me to explore my independence, to plant my 2 feet, to be social, to meet new people, that I was just in a different phase of my life. But did I deeply understand and, you know, feel that longing to just be planted with someone, to be intertwined, to be a part of someone's life in a meaningful way? Absolutely. And I think when you are an independent person who knows what you want out of life and is willing to choose the lonely path, trusting that you will be able to build an exciting life for yourself, to find community when you get to your destination, if you're someone that is courageous enough to choose the lonely path, because it is in pursuit of what you really want out of life, I totally understand and relate to this pressure to just find someone and be in a relationship, because you will continue to take the lonely path, pursue what you need to do for your ambitions, your passions, what it is that you want out of life, to be an independent bitch, but to also have the security and stability of a relationship. I get the appeal of that. For sure I do. To look at the future where, like, you know, maybe your friends get married and have kids and their priorities change, and to picture your life still stable, still coming home to someone, still having someone to intertwine yourself with and plant with. Like, it is scary to picture yourself having to plant with no one to plant yourself around, you know, to be the first flower that's picked versus being a part of a bouquet already. I get it. It is intimidating. And I think, well, I try not to think about it because it is scary to me to think about how different family will look, how different friendships will look. I just want to be happy at the end of it all. I don't need my life to look exactly the same forever. I want my friends and my family members to go off and live whatever life is going to be the most exciting and fulfilling for them, even if it is not in alignment with what I want. And that there's a, you know, a heartbreak and a grief happening there in and of itself. And you can feel all those things, and also trust that as your life changes, as the lives of the people around you change, you will know how to pivot and continue moving towards the life that is the most exciting. I think that sometimes you just have to trust that when you get there, you'll know what to do. Trust that if this day comes where everyone you know gets married and moves out of the city and you are completely alone, trust that you will know how to build your life from the ground up again. You will know how to find new people, to build new community, that you could do it all the fuck over again if you had to. That's what makes me feel better about it, to be honest, because I can't control the future, nor can I predict it. And I don't want to try to either, because I think that sometimes to try to prevent those things from happening is just a, you know, a gateway drug to ending up with a man that you don't actually fucking like just because you're afraid of being alone. So I will continue to take the lonely path, to choose the life that feels the best for me, to get great at making new friends wherever I go, to keep that Girl Scout saying with me no matter what. Maybe I should get it tattooed. to trust in my ability to build an exciting life for myself, to build an aligned life for myself, and know that the right people, the right opportunities, the right choices will enter my life, will become clear to me when they are supposed to come clear to me. I just have a lot of trust in the universe and in myself. And that's the thing that gives me the stability that I need. For so long, I thought that in order to feel like my feet were planted and I had this guarantee of stability, I needed a partner that I could see my life with. And you could do it together. You could do the scary things, do the lonely things, but do it together. But even being with a partner is not a guarantee. Nothing is a guarantee. Really, the only guarantee I have in this life is that I'm going to be with me forever. So I need to learn how to trust myself, how to trust my spirit guides, how to trust the universe, how to trust whatever it is that I believe in. And know that when these like turning points in my life come, that I will know how to handle them and I will know what to do to move towards a life that I love. We can't predict what happens down the line. I get the desire to, especially because when you're younger, when you're a teenager, it's like you can predict your life for a little bit. Like when I was 15, thinking about my future, I thought about this. I knew that this is what I was going to do. When I was 15, this is exactly what I thought of. And now that my life is like this, this life that I dreamt of all of my teen years, I've had so many moments where I'm like, so what's next? And sometimes I'm like, dude, I don't fucking know, actually. Dude, that's actually a great question. And people asked me that too. And it's such a, it's a bigger question. People asked me it in the context of, you know, pursuing YouTube full time and getting to pursue my creative passion. People would always ask me like, all right, you did it. This has been your biggest goal for so long. Like, what's next? And I was always like, dude, I don't know. 4 years later, I'm still like, dude, I don't know. More of this, I guess. Like, I'm just going to keep growing, keep expanding, letting life inspire me day by day. Like, I, you know, 4 years ago, I didn't know that I was going to start this podcast and be doing this till fucking, what is this? Episode 127. Like, I didn't know I was going to be here. We figured that out. Where am I going to be 10 years from now? Dude, I don't fucking know. I literally do not know. Somewhere awesome, though. Somewhere truly fucking awesome. I know that for sure. But when I was younger, I knew that I wanted to go to college in New York. I knew that I wanted to move in New York. I knew that this was the job I wanted to have. But once you have all those things, you move where you want to move. You learn the things you want to learn. You get the job that you want. You know, I'm still fucking baby mode on this shit. I'm 28. Like, I'm moving towards building the life I want for myself. There's still so much more I want out of life, right? But I don't know when and all that shit's going to happen. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm like, it would be cool to do this in my life at some point. But I'm like, I'm 28. I've got so much goddamn time. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or 10 years from now or what my life's going to look like. I'm not going to stress out about it. I'm going to focus on living an exciting and inspiring life day by day and trust that when those big pivotal changing moments in my life come, that I will know what to do with them. I just got to trust myself at some point. And also, I got over this fear of never finding anyone. That took me a while, but I did get over it. And honestly, that felt like a big thing for me. When I really truly got over this fear of ending up alone and not finding the right person for me, doors unlocked. Doors fucking unlocked. Okay. Not to bring it back to Vanderpump Rules, but I was watching Vanderpump Rules. And Sheena, if you've seen the show, but Sheena as a character, her like biggest downfall is her aversion to being alone, which I think is why I'm so fascinated by her. But I'm in season 8 right now, and Sheena is like 32 years old. She is, you know, freshly divorced, and she is dating around, fucking around, but that woman develops a crush on any man that she speaks to for more than 20 seconds. And she was talking in one of her confessionals that I just watched about how difficult it can be to be the only single person in their friend group. Not only that, but being divorced and having to go through the process of freezing your eggs on your own. I feel for her with this. I have empathy for what she must be experiencing. And also, when I heard her say the thing of like, I just look around and feel like I'm missing out on something that all of my friends get to know. And I was like, look around at your fucking friends, girl. I personally don't believe that any of the relationships on Vanderpump Rules are enviable, which I think time ended up showing that that was true. None of those people are still together besides Bo and Stassi, which they would be the only two that I was like, if any of those relationships at season 8 Vanderpump are enviable, I would say Bo and Stassi were the only couple that I would look at and be like, oh, they actually seem happy and like they're good for each other. But like Jax and Brittany, Schwartz and Katie, Tom and Ariana, like Sheena is sitting there looking at all these relationships, thinking that she is truly missing out on something, you know, feeling bad about herself because she's not in a relationship when all the people around her are. But like, look at those relationships, girl. Like, I wanted to shake her a little bit in this confessional where I was like, okay, but let's break it down, because you're not actually envious of what those people have. There's no way, unless you're like, just your eyes and ears are closed and you have no idea what's going on. Like, the second you learn about those relationships, there's no way you're envying them. You don't want what they have. But I look at Sheena and I'm like, God, I wish that her commitment to herself and finding the right people for her was a stronger force in her life than her desire to not be alone. The second you accept that dating is like a whole lot of fucking luck, there are many, many people in the world that don't care about finding the right person for them. They just want to find a person to make it work with. There are plenty of people out there that would choose to be in a relationship that is so clearly not right for them just because they don't want to be alone, or they just want to settle down. We know this. We know this to be true. I don't want to be one of those people. That's fine if other people want to be that, but I don't. So if I'm choosing to be alone, to prioritize my relationship to myself, my relationship with my family, my relationship with my friends, and trusting that I will meet the right person for me when I am supposed to and not a second sooner, if I'm committed to not settling, I'm also accepting that, you know, if we're talking all possibilities, there's always a possibility that you won't ever find the right person for you. And I think, to me, that's not scary, because I don't want to settle. Genuinely, I would rather be alone than be with someone who makes me miserable. Like, watch Vanderpump Rules and tell me, would you rather be alone or would you rather date Tom Sandoval? Would you rather be alone or would you rather date Jax Taylor? Would you rather be alone or would you rather date, insert any other fucking useless man? Like, at the end of the day, I would rather be alone than date someone that wasn't totally right for me. So yes, there's always a possibility you don't meet the right person for you, but that's not scary to me, because being alone is not like the consolation prize anymore. I think I'd be actually totally completely happy by myself. That actually does not seem like the worst thing to me. I would love to fall in love and find someone to spend the rest of my life with, but I don't want to spend the rest of my life with someone who makes me miserable, who's deeply, you know, a fucking loser that I have to take care of all the time. I'm not interested in that. I'm so excited for when I get to fall in love and find someone that really matches me, and I'm happy to be patient and let life surprise me on that front. Maybe I meet them in 5 years. Maybe I meet them in 20 years. Maybe I meet them in 50 years. Maybe I've already met them. According to my psychic, I already have. I think love is abundant. I think friendship is abundant. I think that my trust in myself, in the universe, and my ability to suss out what is best for me in every situation, that is the thing that provides comfort to me. I'm not worried about any of these possible what-if scenarios, because I know that whatever does happen, I will be able to sort through and make the best call for me. There's no use in sorting through all of like the possible what ifs, because at the end of it all, I know I've got me. And that's the part that matters. with that, I'm going to throw us on over to the Patreon, where I've been collecting a bunch of TikToks that I have things to say about. I'm really like, I'm clearing out my camera roll. I'm showing you guys the TikToks that have made me go rah, 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 all fucking week. Okay. This is the final countdown of my hunger before I'm able to eat dinner. So if you want to see me get real hangry, head on over to the Patreon. Check that out. Again, all of the details for the Croatia trip are going to be linked down below. Maybe I'll see you there. Maybe next summer, you and I will be buoyant in the Adriatic. It's entirely possible. That's exactly what we will be doing 10 months from now. Okay? Love you guys so much. See you in next week's episode.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialistly. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialistly with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.